Thank you, Ross, my little invisible friend. Well, this 2012 thing has a lot of people concerned, but I'll tell you what, our next guest, Mr. David Sarita, is an extraordinary individual, and without any further ado, please come into the global living room, won't you, sir? And let's talk about all these wonderful things that you're involved in, from the early sunrise in Greenland to the evolving consciousness of mankind and maybe even a little hope for humanity. Welcome.
Thank you, John. Good to finally meet you and to be on the show with you tonight.
Well, I'm glad that you could make it. I what's up with this 2012 thing, and why is so much stuff happening here, and why are all these airports changing their runway markings because the direction of magnetic north is changing so much?
Well, you know, it's the mainstream media kind of eludes the real truth about what's going on. I mean, we can see directly from NASA that the natural drift rate of magnetic north pole in the 20th century was 10 kilometers per year drifting towards Siberia. But in the 21st century, their data suggests we're at 40 kilometers per year drift rate. So we have a sudden radical increase of 4 times drift rate over the previous century. So something's happening. And then when they announced on NPR News and CNN that they had to change the runways, they made it look like, okay, we waited too long to do this. And when they do, there is a natural drift rate. But the natural drift rate actually drifts to and from you have the physical North Pole, and then you have the magnetic North Pole. And so what happens in a laboratory, if you take a magnet, a strong magnet in your hand, this will be really easy for people to understand. The physical Earth is a physical magnet. We have a molten and a solid iron core, a nickel core in the center of the Earth. In fact, it was previously thought, because the magnetic field around the Earth is so weak, that the Earth's core had a weak magnetic field. But just recently, and this is very, very new, for the first time we've measured the Earth's magnetic field at the core, and it's actually at 25 Gauss, which is actually incredibly strong. I mean, if we were living in a field of even 2 or 3 Gauss, it would actually melt our brains. We're used to living, you know, in an environment in the milligauss range. I mean, we're lucky if we even have 1 milligauss of background radiation living in a city with all of the cell phones and all of the, you know, TV transmission lines. So the Earth's magnet is quite strong. And if you hold a magnet in front of a radio transmitter, it vibrates. So what happens in the solar system is that the sun sends electromagnetic pulses to the Earth, and like a radio transmitter, and because the Earth is a magnet, it wobbles, it actually vibrates. And in that vibrational pattern, we get changes in the alignment of the north magnetic field, and the physical magnetic field is the physical magnet, and it vibrates in correspondence to that magnetic field vibration. So what's happening now is an acceleration. There's no doubt that in NASA's data, that we see a huge increase in the drift rate. But what is utterly astounding in the way the media kind of buried the story of the Greenland early sunrise is that Greenland normally goes into, just like in Alaska, you get the land of the midnight sun. So you get, the sun never really sets in the summer for a period of time, depending on how far north you live. And the same thing happens in the dead of winter. So, you know, this town in Greenland, it reported that the sun rises every year on the 13th of January for the first time coming out of that darkness.
Right.
And it rose on January the 11th at 1 p.m. So you have 1-11-11-2011. So you have, you know, the first, you know, hour. So it's all 11. It's kind of like a mystical number. You wonder, like, that is that a coincidence that this happened? And so everybody, well, it must have been the ice melting. and that this is really laughable science. In fact, in Time magazine, you know, most astrophysicists disagreed with the ice melting because that's the first thing they said, oh, we can't believe that the sun would rise 2 days early. Because if you take the 24,000-mile circumference of the Earth and you see, I mean, this is on a flat two-dimensional plane, that there's 365 days in a year, so, you know, roughly 360 degrees, you know, turning around the sun. The planet Earth makes one revolution around the sun per year on its tilted axis. So 1 degree, what is 1 degree on the horizon out of those 360 degrees? Well, with our 24,000-mile circumference, 1 degree is about 67 miles, you know, roughly. It's very close to that. So for the sun to rise 2 days early, you, of course, it's not a full degree to rise 2 days early. In fact, it's nowhere near that. But a mile is 5,280 feet. That's just 1 mile. So you imagine how much ice would have to melt in a single year for that theory to be correct. And you would have to melt miles of ice for that theory to be correct. I mean, many miles. I don't know the exact number, but it's a full degree is 67 miles. So that's 67 miles of ice to have a full degree change in the Earth. That's the physical Earth. That's not the Earth's magnetic field. So with all the hoopla and the berry, of, you know, the cover-up of the story, it was just, oh, it's just the melting ice, but in Time magazine, they disagreed. Well, I found research online in the actual town in Greenland, where this is actually occurring. A local resident took out his compass. His name is Johnny Tarhonen, and it's posted at poleshifting.com. And he measured this compass on the 11th of January and noticed it was 3 to 4 degrees off of true north. 3 to 4 degrees. I mean, that's
a lot.
That's 67 miles times four.
Yeah.
That's huge. And then by the 14th of January, it went back to normal. Now, that is incredible. Because let's get a bigger picture of what's happening. Because first of all, we see a compass is measuring the magnetic field, not necessarily the physical Earth. But to get an early sunrise, and this is a huge subject because, well, some scientists are saying the ice is melting. Other scientists are saying because the ice is melting, the mountains in Greenland are pushing up because they don't have all that weight on anymore. So there's no way they can win the argument that that's what happened. And then you understand that the physical Earth would have had to wobble by at least a degree or possibly less to have a two-day sunrise. But that's a lot, you know, even if it's mild. Now, what happened? Let's go earlier, you know, back in the picture here. We see from geological sensor data, we have these earthquake sensors placed all over the planet. They're distributed in various places. And when an earthquake goes off, the sensors that are further away from the quake get a weaker signal. But on December 22nd of 2010, suddenly all the sensors all over the Earth all went off with a full signal strength at the same time. This wasn't an earthquake. This was like a vibration. Our solar system is traveling at about 11 million miles per day around the Milky Way galaxy. So we're entering new fields of space every single day, all the time, that there's no way we can predict what will happen when the solar system travels through those magnetic fields. And it's really incredible because what happens is with this theory of 2012 is that we're going to go into this new energy, and there's going to be either a big shift of energy that's going to affect every living thing on the planet, including the planet itself, and possibly trigger Earth changes and earthquakes, which could help explain all of the drastic things that are happening right now. So when you go into a new energy field, changes are very sudden. You get these sudden vibrations. And so there it was. Everybody missed it. And I got this email on the USGS site, and certainly it is very different than the normal background of earthquake data. You get these strong spikes in one location and weak spikes or no spikes in another location. But this was every sensor in the world at the same time.
It's amazing.
December 23rd, the next day, The largest storm ever recorded on Saturn erupts. In fact, the storm is still going on today, and it's far bigger than our planet, which is proof that the whole solar system was entering a new field of energy that was vibrating everything. And then suddenly, within days, you know, you talk about the 1st of January, you have the birds dying and things falling out of the sky.
Oh, yes.
And then I'm just going through a chain of events here, right? And then all of a sudden, on the 11th of January, which is a 1-1-1-1, you get this possible wobble in the physical field of the Earth. Now, prior to that, I had gotten emails from private physics conferences where they stated that some of the recent solar flares that we've had, which are quite powerful, they've seen magnetic north wobble 500 miles just momentarily and then come back.
Only 500? And then come back.
And then come back. So, you know, that's private data. But 500 miles is not quite 10 degrees, right?
Right.
Because 67 miles per degree times 10 is 670 miles. But that's a long way, a 500-mile wobble. What happens with a physical magnet in a magnetic field is if the magnetic field strength changes or shifts for long enough, eventually the physical magnet will be affected by that movement. And that's when you get a pole shift.
I'll tell you what I want to do, David. I want to get into this, and I want to just ask a few rudimentary questions, and then you bring everybody out there up to speed on exactly what the ramifications and the essence and the absolute essential aspect of magnetism and vibration in general, what effect these components have on humanity as a whole, consciousness and everything else, so that we can pull the science into you know, a practical application for the man and woman on the streets.
Right.
If that's all right. So let's pause now. We're speaking with David Sirita, and it's going to get deep. You may want to keep some waders handy. This is Coast to Coast AM. David, tell us what vibrations and magnetism and electromagnetic energy means to the human being. I have often wondered if it was a very good idea for all these. Of course, I'm delighted to be broadcasting with you over countless numbers of them, but I've wondered what effect even big television and radio transmitters have on the human condition. I couldn't help but notice one of the popular jogging paths has some high-tension power lines running over them, and all the treetops are all distorted and so forth. So I suppose electromagnetism, solar bursts of electromagnetic radiation can be your friend, can be detrimental, yes?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, let's first start with measuring. You know, I've spent, you know, the last several years developing technologies in the lab to firstly measure. I personally measured almost 1,000 people's millivolts in their electrical bodies. We are electrical systems. We have nerves that are like wires. We're like a liquid crystal semiconductor. We have water, minerals, and we have nervous systems that run positive and negative ions. And no two persons has the same body voltage, and that is because of, you know, either not getting enough proper minerals in their diet or not getting enough contact with the earth energy. And so some of the things that I've done is I've developed technologies, you know, quantum energy generators, where I've been able to vibrate crystalline stone pendants and jewelry and put them in contact with people and measure the changes in their electrical field. We are so weak in electrical energy that on the surface, you know, the average person might have 100 millivolts in their nervous system, which is a really, really weak field. Using these things called SQUIDs, which are these quantum sensors that can measure the electromagnetic field radiating from the human being's heart, a dog or a cat or even a leaf. I mean, these sensors are so super powerful that they can actually prove and sense the fields of energy that radiate off our body. And then, you know, later we developed, Konstantin Korotkov in Russia developed the most advanced human aura cameras. You know, they can actually see the human energy field. And when you understand how electromagnetism coming from the sun affects living things and how weak that field from the sun is by the time it gets to our planet and our biological system. We're so sensitive that the tiniest changes in electromagnetic fields can alter our DNA. Our actual DNA can change. Now, it was previously thought by medical doctors and biologists that energy was the ruler of the universe, that energy was telling the biology or the matter of the planet what to do. So we imagine our planet moving at 11 million miles a day around the galaxy, and we're rising north above the galactic plane at over 300,000 miles a day. We're going faster than any spaceship has ever traveled. And so what happens is these super sensitive organisms that we are, and many of us are too weak, when we suddenly receive a huge impetus of energy, of cosmic energy, it affects our consciousness tremendously. Tremendously, even these weak changes. So I mentioned this vibration on December 22nd that vibrated through the planet. A storm erupted on Saturn. We see birds dying and species dying all over the planet, which may or may not have to do with that. And we see radical shifts in consciousness, you know, the riots in Tunisia and now in Egypt. So it's kind of like a ripple effect, you know, that's happening. And at the same time, on a much more severe level, stronger magnetic fields coming from cell phone towers and TV towers and high-tension power lines can do a lot to living systems and DNA because they're not harmonic. One of the things I've done in my work on differentials, the hidden harmonic codes of the universe, is identify fields of energy that are way beyond the standard knowledge of frequencies, of standalone frequencies, and understanding that these harmonic values energetically can go way out of balance. A lot of human energy systems go way out of balance. And when they go out of balance, out of harmony, they lose their energy in their magnetic field, their very weak magnetic field, which could contribute to an epidemic of physical depression and physical depressions of energy. In fact, many people whose millivolts that I've measured who are physically depressed, who suffer from chronic depression and even nervous system disorders like fibromyalgia, they have really low millivolts in their nervous system.
Really?
And we can change that with very, very subtle energy devices. But when you're talking about a pole shift and you're talking about a huge magnetic energy change in the solar system and the planet, you're talking about a field of energy that has either chaos or harmonic information inside of it. And if it's harmonic information inside of it, there's absolutely no doubt that you can scientifically prove that there is going to be a consciousness shift on this planet, at the very least in 2012. There's no doubt because we can see it happening. We can see the solar system ringing. We can see all of these changes, you know, happening in the solar system, like the poles on Mars melting and the storms on Jupiter, and now this sudden storm on Saturn. We can see that there's a change in the vibration of the solar system.
David, tell me something. What is the nature of this storm, and what creates it?
The storm on Saturn?
Yes.
Well, everything, see, Einstein says the field is the sole governing agency of the particle matter. Fields of energy dictate what bodies are, from subatomic particles to human bodies to whales and dolphins to dogs and cats to planets. They determine what's going to happen. And so from weather systems to, you know, giant storms on Saturn and Jupiter, if you see a sudden change in an energy system, you're going to see a sudden change in an ecosystem to a biological system.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is what is the nature of the storm activity?
Well, the nature of the storm activity is a giant swirling. I mean, Saturn is usually... The storms are usually down low. It's a very smooth-looking atmosphere. It's not like Jupiter with all the bubbles and the spots and you know, the really fancy marble-like patterns in it. Saturn is usually a much smoother-looking object to look at. But the storm, you can Google it right now, anybody who's interested. It is massive. It is utterly massive. So there's no doubt that from an energy or field perspective that something has happened, because that was only 2 days after the ringing of Earth like a giant bell. In fact, the storm on Saturn probably started in the same moment But NASA actually didn't detect it until days later.
Unbelievable. We're going to take a hard break now, which we must take at the bottom of the hour. But we are with David Sirita, and we are getting into some very interesting things. Interesting for everybody. Evolution is not easy, is it? It's like a child teething. Painful. We are not only entering, but we have, in fact, entered a new age of awareness, and everyone knows it. And even if they don't know it, they sense it. They feel it. Hopefully enlightenment will follow. I think it's a poor idea and perhaps even a large error to deny it. We're speaking with David Sirita tonight. Please stay with us. This is the one and only Coast to Coast AM. John B. Wilson with you tonight, and our guest is David Sirita. David, everybody's been paying a lot of attention to 2012. Well, tell us, just briefly, why that date, and are you convinced that it is the date to expect something large?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, John. I know everybody's thinking about the date. There are actually two different dates. Don Alejandro Oxage, who's the head of he's the current head Mayan elder, says that the real end date is October 28th or 29th of 2011, this year. And it actually marks the beginning of the end. And the traditional date is December, the end of December 2012. You know, and so is that date, I mean, I look more cosmologically because I understand how quantum physicists today say that they've made a great leap in understanding on how information or consciousness, you know, when you think of having a thought, does a thought have any weight to it? Does it have any power? Well, we are little transmitters. You know, we don't have a lot of energy in our field. You know, we have millivolts in our nervous system. We have a magnetic field that can be detected by these super quantum squid detectors. So we really are alive electrically. And we are going to be affected by these new electrical energies in the solar system as our solar system moves through the galaxy. But, you know, do we know that what's going to happen on 2012 is going to be a huge energy shift, and inside of that energy, a new consciousness to bring change? And actually, you know, that's theory number one. And theory number two is it going to be the end of the world because this new energy and information is going to, because if you have a physical pole shift, even, you know, 10 degree sudden pole shift would cause massive earthquakes.
A 10 degree what?
Even a 10 degree physical pole shift that is sudden would cause massive earthquakes. You don't need to have a complete flip of the poles, even though NASA's data suggests the average is about every 300,000 years you're going to get a physical pole shift, a complete pole reversal. And they think the last one was 780,000 years ago. Well, that means we're overdue. And it's not impossible. I mean, they're seeing the Earth's magnetic field is collapsing. It's collapsed 10% since the 19th century. We're now in the 21st century. And so we see that the natural drift rate of the poles has increased from 10 kilometers per year in the 20th century to 40 kilometers per year in the 21st century. So that's a radical change that should duly note it. And it's an early indicator that we might be heading towards a physical pole shift. Anything that's sudden physically isn't good for people who live near coastlines because of giant tsunamis. And the Ring of Fire, where most of the earthquakes occur, is commonly in the coastal regions around the planet. So, you know, that wouldn't be good. But if it was more gradual and gentle in that pole shifting process, it wouldn't necessarily destroy, you know, all of life on Earth, and it would be the end of the world. Now, whether we know that the Mayans' calendar of the 5,000 and some odd year cycle that is ending means a pole shift, the Mayans have not been clear about. We know that we are entering a new energy in the galaxy. That is a fact. And if we superimpose our entire solar system onto an atom, and we think of subatomic particles like planets and the nucleus of the atom, where the proton and the neutron and the quarks are, as the sun, for example. We can see that when electrons jump into higher frequency orbits, as they migrate closer to the center of the nucleus, it's the kind of the same thing we're doing now. As we're spinning around the galaxy at 11 million miles a day, we're also entering a higher frequency because we're migrating closer to the center of the galaxy. But in atoms, there are these things called membranes or shells. And they're kind of barriers that when an electron crosses it, you get a sudden radical transformation of the electron, and it becomes lighter and it accelerates much, much faster than it normally travels, and sometimes many times faster than the speed of light. It just disappears from detection equipment. So if that's an indicator on a larger scale, the transformations are sudden, like in 2 Peter in the Bible, in a twinkling of an eye. You know, all of the elements will melt with fervent heat. Everything changes. You get the new heaven and the new earth. So if something like that is coming, there's no doubt that NASA can't see it coming because we're traveling into new space every single day. But what I'm more excited about is the first proposition, because you think of, okay, our new children that are being born into this new energy, this new solar energy, this new cosmic energy, their DNA is brand, brand new. In fact, my wife and I just had a daughter, Alira, in October of this year, so she's only 3 months old. And when my wife was in labor, the sun had these three super powerful magnetic spots that were, you know, as the sun spins around every 27 days, it comes into this alignment where some of these spots are direct Earth-facing. And when magnetic spots are direct Earth-facing, they're very, very powerful. And that energy imprints in the DNA of all living things being born in the presence of that. And I tend to think, like a lot of people do, that it's really, there is an energy shift that we're all going to feel because we're all sensitive. But most of us adults who are past 27 years of age, our DNA factory has already told the RNA and the proteins in our body how to build us. And people like Bruce Lipton say that they have data that suggests that consciousness tells energy to tell the DNA what to do. You know, so your blueprint is not, your genes are not your blueprint. Your consciousness is your blueprint, which is your structure for information. So you think of these new children, and they're coming in. And we've done incredible studies here and had amazing, amazing experiences with our child and with other children that have these phenomenal abilities. I mean, really, really phenomenal abilities, which we can talk about later, some actual case examples that are going to blow people's minds, utterly blow people's minds, of what is actually possible. That is where you're going to see the real shift, because who changes the world? It's, you know, some people say, you know, well, it's science and money and politics that changes the world. But who are scientists and who are politicians and who are the architects of the new world, the future children? And this radical shift that we're going through right now, a lot of, you know, PhD psychologists and educators are saying is, why are all these new children being born in epidemic numbers, which what we label as ADD, attention deficit disorder? Why don't they like our educational models? Why are they turning it all down and actually dropping out of high school in epidemic numbers? Because these new kids have new information that the cosmos imprinted in their DNA when they were born. And with that new information, they have new ideas. And if we're really honest, as great as our country is, as America is, I mean, all of the greatest inventions of the world started here first, you know, somewhere between here and Europe, most of them. And they're really great inventions, a lot of them. We have not paid enough attention to exploring holistic energy sources for all of the technology that we have on the planet, and that is our greatest demise. That is where we're destroying the oceans and the oil spills and all of the toxic waste dumping and nuclear waste dumping in the oceans. We've ignored that one. We know we have the internet, we have all this stuff, but we're just saying, okay, let's just keep making more gadgets and more things that use energy. Let's not focus tremendously on what the real potential is for nuclear fusion and, you know, zero-point energy and anti-gravity and these things. So what's shifting is our children are saying, well, we have abilities and we understand things that you don't understand.
Only this time it's true.
And this time it's true, but we're saying, no, you have to be educated the way we were educated. But if you educate the children the way we were educated, they're going to produce the same results we have now. And we've got some good results. We've got brilliant people in this country that are not getting funding for incredible ideas right now. And these kids have abilities to clearly talk with angels and from the other side and get the information we need, not just to talk to our dead grandmother or, you know, which is wonderful, but they can actually have dialogues with the other side so that we can solve these world problems. And we think that's not important. We think, well, we have, you know, we're limited to this idea that in the West, what we did is we got rid of what ancient cultures and the Mayan cultures is a great example, and Native American cultures, and even Tibetan and Buddhist cultures, and even mystic Christian cultures had, which is the person who was the shaman or the conduit between humanity and the angels and God. And that person could create a dialogue. And these are not just general dialogues. I mean specific dialogues, how to create a new biofuel, how to actually access the zero-point energy field. These are things that are possible, dialogue like that. But in our culture, we removed the shaman. We don't have a shaman. We don't have these conduits in our churches. In our churches, we say, well, same problem. We have stories that are thousands of years old that we adhere to like glue, and if God wants to send us a new message through the church, they won't allow it because they say, well, that's not in the Bible. That's not in the book. You can't do that. Well, if God wanted to broadcast on a television set and say, or an extraterrestrial intelligence, that wouldn't work either. So what is the best television set to broadcast through is the human consciousness, the human organism. And who are the new children that are coming in but perfect vessels to receive a message and receive information that could change everything down here?
David, something that's been, I don't want to wax too pedestrian for you because obviously you're a scientist and more. In the old days, we read books. We read the great books. I've said this a few times. If I'm repeating myself, forgive me. But some of the filmmakers and the screenplay writers seem to have either supplemented, if not supplanted, some of the great writers. And this that Nicolas Cage film, Knowing, and I don't want to wreck the movie for anybody, but where I'm going here is angels and UFOs. Do you see any correlation between the angelic entity and what is commonly referred to as an ET?
Well, we get a lot of education in the UFO community where I'm very popular about, some of the darker extraterrestrials and some of the ones that are responsible for actions like the fourth kind and, grays and things like that. But what we're not exposed to and what I've had a lot of experience with are more of the angelic or positive extraterrestrials. And I think that there are, and this gets into, let's go back to the human organism and body voltage because this is a really interesting subject. In order for a physical organism to survive in a super high energy cosmic energy field, it has to raise its vibration, its electrical vibration, its frequency, its harmonic value. There are examples of saints, of Catholic saints, walking into burning furnaces and flames all around them, and they don't even get a scratch. They don't even get a blister. Now, how does that happen physically? Because a normal person who walks into, a flaming furnace is going to die, is going to burn. Well, what fire really is the difference in potential, of energy potential, between a low energy or low frequency life form and a super high frequency energy, which is what fire is. But when a high frequency waveform enters a high frequency field, the difference between them, there's very little friction, so there's no burning. Now, when you think of NASA looking for the proof of extraterrestrial life, they're looking for these habitable zones in planets like ours where the temperature is just right, 72 degrees, and the water melts and, your far enough away from your sun, but close enough to get a nice suntan. They're looking for that. But when you understand membranes in biological systems, the membrane around a cell, there are examples of increasing the frequency or energy of a membrane, and it's surviving in a much higher temperature environment really, really well. So it's really all about the energetics of a cell, of an organism, and its membrane. So the problem is fields of energy that emanate from living systems that are super high energy, they transmit that energy to everything around them. We can take an example of a Tesla transmitter coil, which is transmitting real electricity, and then you just put some copper wire and spin it in a circle in a coil, which has no electricity in it, and hold it near it. That coil, that receiver coil with no energy, will start to radiate with energy because it's receiving the transmission. We're kind of the same way. And what happens is super high energy beings, basically because we're such a weak energy field, they fry our circuits. This is why I believe the God of Moses warned the people, you know, he put markers around the mountain, because if you get too close, you are going to burn, you're going to fry. And Moses somehow had trained and did mystic practices like some, you know, like I mentioned, some of these Catholic saints who can be in these high energy fields of fire and they don't even burn. He was able to withstand the super powerful vibrations of his God. Now, I think in the fourth kind, it was kind of very similar to that. The new children being born into the new sun and the new energy, their DNA is getting imprinted with this kind of information. And their abilities, we're not prepared in the Western world to understand and deal with some of these abilities. And I've seen incredible things happen with my own daughter just before she was born and in the aftermath. It is like a science fiction movie. I mean, most people could not understand it, but because of my background in science and daily meditation for 30 years, it's very easy for me to and my wife to deal with. In fact, tonight, this is really exciting because just before the show started, my wife and baby are asleep in our bedroom, and I have one of these little infrared camera monitors. So our bedroom is pitch black, and I'm looking on the monitor, which is night vision, and I see this soft, round ball of light coming down from the ceiling and going right into my daughter's head. And it's the ball of light is about the size of my wife's head. And because the show hadn't started yet, I went in and I whispered, Crystal, you know, I can't even believe what I just saw. I just saw this ball of light on the night vision go into Alira's head. And she said, I was just praying to my angels to ask for protection for her. I mean,
it's interesting.
Showed up on the camera.
That's unbelievable. And I'll tell you, they're actually, you know, I'm not the least bit squeamish about getting into this. A lot of people shy away from biblical prophecy and just discussions about the contents of the Bible altogether.
No, and I'm not shy of that at all.
I'm not shy about it either, not in the least. But I'll tell you, on the Coast to Coast AM website, you'll see a link that shows what is if this isn't extraterrestrial phenomenon, I don't know what it is, because there's an orb that descends almost to ground level right at the Temple Mount, and you see this little double wave pulse come out, and this thing shoots up like faster than any rocket I've ever seen. I mean, it's ballistic, literally, and it's on the site now. And a couple of guys are speaking Hebrew in the background, and they're really surprised at what's happening too. So, let me just suggest to our wonderful audience, these are, in my opinion, the best listeners on the whole planet, that the next 2 hours would not be the best time for you to go away, because we're going to carry on with this. And David, you just pulled a cord on this train if it starts going too fast. But it looks to me like between the events of among the populace here on planet Earth, the UFO guy showing up over the nuclear bases every time tensions get high, to quote Art Bell, something is going on. We will be back with David Sirita. This is Coast to Coast AM.